It's not a nice history.
It's a way of being.
You're listening to CKDU 88.1 FM. Good morning. We're going to be right back after the theme song with a special roundtable discussion this morning on autism and living with autism and the challenges that brings to society. So welcome everybody to Operation Wake Up. We'll be right back.
It's not a nice history.
Life. You are listening to Operation Wake Up, brought to you by the CKDU News Collective, Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Life was like
on CKDU 88.1 FM, www.ckdu.ca.
Now turn to the left.
A very powerful, unique experience. very powerful, unique experience.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to another edition of Operation Wake Up. It's Wednesday morning, October 1st, a new month, and we're really happy to bring a very special edition this morning to those listeners out there. Again, Operation Wake Up is brought to you by the CKDU News Collective, which is a group of people who put together different news articles, different news stories, and on the Operation Wake Up, hosted live to have different debates and discussions and analyses, different topics of broad social interest. And we're really excited this morning because we're having a panel discussion, and I've got four people here in the studio with me, with one other person on the way. So it's going to be a really packed studio, and we're excited about that. It's a discussion on autism and living with autism. In the studio here with me on my left is Hamid Sakai, who is a brother of an autistic person. He is a student at MSVU, so welcome, Hamid.
Thank you.
And we also have Robab Hagpan, who is a mother of an autistic child. She's a student at DAL, founder of DCAS. And let me, tell me if I get this right, the Dalhousie, tell
Culture
me what.
Culture of Autism Awareness Society.
Dalhousie Culture of Autism Awareness Society. Excellent. Okay.
Thank you,
Robab. And Robab's been lobbying at the federal level and had a lot of local political projects going on as well for advocating for autistic people and autistic rights. So we'll be touching on that topic a little bit later, too. Also in the studio with us is Don Morrison, who is a employee here at Dalhousie and a mother of an autistic child. Welcome to the studio, Don.
Thank you.
And also John Muley, who is a student at DAL and on the executive of DCAS. So welcome to the studio, John.
Morning, Dave.
And John's also going to be the DJ with us this morning, so he brought in some tunes that we're going to use throughout the hour. So, it's good to have you here in the studio, and I wanted to start off by asking what it's like to live with an autistic child or an autistic brother. And I've worked with a few different autistic one camper when I was a camp counselor when I was 16, so over 12 years ago. I've had some experience working with an autistic child. He was 16 years old. I was 18. So it's definitely steep learning curve. But I'd like you to tell me about what it's like living with an autistic person and advocating for them. So whoever would like to start, whether it's Hamid or Robab or Don, feel free.
Okay, I'll start.
Okay.
I have a 7-year-old boy, Max, who is absolutely delightful and very, very intelligent, sweet little boy with autism. What it's like living with Max, everyone can talk at length about their child, so I can sit here and talk for an hour about all of Max's really, really good qualities and what a sweet little boy he is. That's just a given. In terms of the challenges of autism, one of the biggest things that I live with is constant fear for Max because he is a flight risk, which is common to a lot of children with autism. That means he runs. So he will run at any time away and into traffic. So he also has absolutely no fear of anything. So there have been times I've chased him into traffic and we've almost gotten hit. So that's one of the things that is a constant fear for me. Max is 7 years old and he's doing really, really well. He's had some early intervention through a provincial early intervention program. But there are a lot of challenges. He needs some extra supports to learn in the school system, and he has those supports in place. He has an EPA, and he has things like visual schedules to help him understand what his day is going to be like, because a lot of children are very visual, a lot of autistic children. If they can see things, if they can see pictures of something, they can understand it almost instantly, much more than if you try and explain something to them. So he has a lot of supports that help him to learn in the school. But there are still a lot of things that we deal with. Socialization is really difficult for children with autism. Through the program he was in, they actually modeled for him how to approach a group of kids and say, "Hi, let's play." Because all of those things that most parents take for granted with their children that they just pick up, growing up along the way, autistic children don't pick up. So, you know, really language skills, socialization skills, coming out of that bubble that they are in, that all has to be painstakingly taught to them step by step by step. So, and the language, now that Max is 7, he's very, very verbal, and, you know, you probably almost couldn't tell by talking to him that he is autistic, except he perseverates, it's called. He'll ask the same question over and over and over and over again, or sometimes he'll do a bit of scripting from movies and things like that. But for the most part, verbally, he's great. But when he was 3 and 4 years old, he couldn't say anything. I think when he was 3 and a half, he might have had 2 words. And I have twins, so my girl was just talking a blue streak when she was 2 and saying, "Hey, Mommy, let's have spaghetti for dinner." My son wasn't saying a word. And so, you know, that didn't come till much, much later, probably 1.5 years after Olivia started talking. So I don't want to hog up all the airtime. Those have been some of my experiences. Anybody else want to join in?
I just wanted to ask, what's scripting for movies?
Oh, sorry. Max has almost photogenic memory, but auditorially as well, not visually. So anything he hears, it's almost like he's got a tape recorder in his head. So he can just start talking, and he can say the first 5 minutes of any movie that he likes, virtually word for word. So sometimes, especially in the beginning when he was getting his language, he wasn't speaking functionally. In other words, he had all the words and could say them, but he couldn't say, "Hi, Mom, how are you?" Or if I said, "Max, how was your day?" That's still a really difficult question for him. But he might start talking to me, saying lines from Finding Nemo or something, and I'll say the lines back of the other character. And we'll talk like that for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. But that's our give and take. That's our small talk. And so it's not a typical mother and son conversation, but it's how we began talking to each other. It's how we started the dialogue, and how he started learning to talk and relate in the world. So,
Robab or Hamid, would you like to continue with your experiences?
Yes, actually, I have a 10-year-old brother, and he's improved a lot ever since he was around 6 years old. Like, one of the things that I think is common for most autistic children, and definitely my brother had, was they're very hypersensitive to hearing. Like, it's almost like sometimes things that we don't hear, they hear it and they react to it, even though it's not the intensity of it. It might be just what it sounds like to them. So if I was on the bus or something and he hears like something I could hear, a car horn, and I could see that he's reacting badly, and he would have tantrums, which would be difficult to deal with. But sometimes I wouldn't even know what it is, but because he was holding his ears, I could tell that it's something audio related. And those symptoms have kind of become better, but just like the other guest said, I did have a lot more problems with the flightiness of sometimes if something happens that he gets disturbed on the sidewalk, if it's noise related or something, there is always the risk of him running out into the street. And like that's why it's almost become a reflex that I hold his hand. Like, it seems odd, why would you always hold a 10-year-old's hand? But and it's just become reflex. He's a lot more reliable now, but those are some of the difficulties. But we noticed that when we change his diet, certain things that, like, if we cut milk and meat, and add certain foods like quail eggs and things like that, which it's not really based on that much evidence-based medicine, but from our own experiences, from our own alternative readings, we've noticed that his symptoms have improved. So by the age of 10, I would say he's a lot better than he is at age of 6, but still a bit of a challenge.
Are these improvements something that you can be learned as well?
Actually, it's not just diet or things. We've we've got him to become more socialized. Like, I would take him to the park. At first, he didn't like things like running at all. And I would take him to the park and play soccer with him and stuff. And then I learned that he does actually like chess because I tried teaching him the first time. But with these kind of like cognitive or sport type things, I noticed that he actually becomes more sociable and he reacts better to me. Like, he's just like any other kid. Like, if he's happy, he says it, or if he's sad. But other times, like when he was younger, before we started doing this, he was unreactive. So definitely, like, it's also like how you interact with him and what kind of activities you do, as well as, you know, other things like what kind of food you feed him and things like that.
Thank you, Hamid. Robert, would you like to continue?
Sure. Actually, both of the speakers, they cover most of the things that we face, almost the same things. And my son, actually, when he was born, we were in Edmonton at that time, that healthcare over there, just you can't take a baby to pediatrician, and always under guide of the pediatrician, they always check. So he was developing very well. He had no problem, and he was a little bit more than average, cognitive, physically, and he was 1.5. He was familiar with 3 languages, and he spoke a little bit of each one of them. But around 2, he stopped. He became completely mute. No language at all. Even he wouldn't ask for food, or if he was thirsty, he wouldn't ask. So at that time, we started speech therapies, and he was diagnosed with hyperlexia. Hyperlexia means that children can read in early age, and they are good on computer, they read, and they can write, but there is no language that they can make their own language, they can make their own sentences. So that was the problem with him. At first, he was diagnosed with that. So around 3 years old, he was able to type sentences on the computer, but not on the hand. So, and long sentences. So he was familiar with numbers. And still didn't have a language. So then I put him piano lesson. And because he grew up with the classical music, so he was familiar with it. He got interested, and he learned music language, but still the other language wasn't there. Until one day that I can't forget, that he showed me a cat, and he said C-A-T. That's how he broke that the barrier of communication. That was the time that he realized that he can communicate, but we were communicating through spelling. I had to learn everything by spelling, and just we were communicating through that. And when I took him here to one private speech pathologist, and she said that he will never gonna talk. He always gonna talk by computer. And I say, just, I guess, mother intuition. I refused to accept that, and I took him another pathologist. And I said that my son loves letters. He understands, seems that to me, he understands when he sees the writing. He's not a picture person. So we want to come up with a strategy, teach him the language. And you know what? That was successful. He started to talk later on at age 6. So he's a very bright child. He was 5.5. Actually, based on his assessment at IWK, they said that his reading level is grade 2 level. So he wasn't in school yet. And he plays chess. He's very good in computer, but language is still his delay. He's developing is so much better. but language is a big problem. Socialization is a big problem. Auditory hypersensitivity is a big problem. Running away, actually, once we had almost accident in North Street, we were here in New York, just moved from Vancouver, looking for apartment, and suddenly he ran to the street, and there was a gentleman. If he didn't pick up my son, I would have lost him. These horrible things that you always just, you know, have to watch for in case that, you know, because he doesn't understand the danger. That's definitely a big issue.
Mm. Thank you, Robob. Thank you for our three panelists for telling about your experience. And of course, John, we don't want to leave you in the dark. We'd like to, but you're a part of DCAS, and you've joined out of, you've joined, have you had experience with autistic people before joining? And tell me about your history with it.
Unlike everyone else here, I don't personally have anyone in my family or any personal relationship with an autistic person. I'm being perfectly honest, my interest in autism first came out of my undergraduate neuroscience classes and just coming to understand the difference between what a psychological disorder and a neurological disorder is. I think there's a real common misconception between the two, and people, I think, often fail to understand that the neurological problem is a physical problem that's not curable by willpower, we'll say. And so that's where my interest began. My sister does a lot of work with autistic children, coaching for language. She's taking audiology, and how it's inspired her and moved her to work with these people and to be part of breaking through communication barriers. I guess inspiration travels. So that's where my interest began. And then in my undergraduate classes with Robob, I more or less got sucked into her gravity, we'll say, because Robob is a relentless activist, we'll say, and is indefatigable for her cause. And myself, I've done precious little activism work, or precious little get up and go, so to speak. And so when Robob approached me to participate in the society and to help out, the combination of my interest and my will to help, I suppose, compassion in general, brought me here.
Well, thanks everyone for coming out this morning. We're going to be right back after a quick break. And you're listening to CKDU 88.1 FM. We have here Robob Hagpan, Hamid Sakai, Don Morrison, and John Muley. That's who we've been speaking with. We'll be right back after this.
Feel, 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 feel. Halifax Raging Grannies, and you're listening to CKDU 88.1 FM. Halifax Raging Grannies, more widespread than ever.
Well, things can be broken down in this world of ours. You don't have to be a famous person just to make a mark. A mother can be an inspiration to a little son to change his thoughts and mind his life. Just with a gentle hum. So different, yeah, so the same. Two sisters. You got the different kinds with different ways. It will take a lifetime to explain, and I won't say. Is she two different people with two separate lives? And you put the two together, you get a spectacular. You got the different kinds with different ways. It would take a lifetime to explain. Now I won't say, hey.
Are back on CKDU 88.1 FM. We've been speaking about autism this morning. We've been having a roundtable discussion with Hamid Sakai, Robab Hakban, Don Morrison, and John Muley, who are in the studio with us this morning, and we might be expecting a fifth guest, Stephen Lang, a little bit later in the hour. And it's funny because we always say the best stuff off camera. We've been having this really exciting conversation while the songs were playing, and I wish I could bring it to you all. But one of the questions that came up was, why should people care? Why should people who aren't affected by autism in their daily life care about autism? Why does it matter to them? Is it a health issue or a social issue? And I wanted to come back to those questions, but I also want to ask how you deal with tantrums. That was something that was interesting that I wanted to, and later we're going to talk about some of the government issues and the government sort of the inability to deal with it and sort of handling it like an economic issue by people who don't understand it, people who don't understand autism. But I found this interesting. Hamid, you had said sometimes your brother has tantrums, and what's the best way to deal with that, or how do you deal with that?
The best way that I've found is, like, if it's an immediate thing, like you're on the sidewalk or something, first of all, I try to gain control of the situation by calming him down so that he won't run, or at least trying to block him if he does try to run. And when it is a full-blown tantrum, I don't have too much control. So the most I could do is just wait until it blows off. And sometimes, like, I might have to, like, hold him and even sit down with him for 15 minutes until he gets calm. But if it's luckily, I could do more preventative. Like I usually tell him, like, if we're going outside, like, if you show good behavior, then you know, we could get to do this. I mean, I'd hate to say it's bribery, but I'd say it's more prevention, so that he keeps that in mind, so that when something does happen, and that's one of the things, he does remember the deal, so somehow, because he's already been primed for it, he's better able to handle it, so that if there was a really bad noise he heard or something that disturbed him, it won't be a full-blown tantrum, because we always make these deals when we go out. And it doesn't even have to be like I'm going to buy you something. It could be like we're going to play a game when we get back home or something like that. But the best way I do it is just by preventing the tantrum. But otherwise, other than calming him down, I don't really have a foolproof method of controlling the tantrum, other than controlling the situation as best as I can.
And Don Morrison, you were telling us that you also write. You also write about a column about Max, your son. Tell
us
about that.
I started writing a column called Life with Max because when I first got the autism diagnosis, I started reading everything I possibly could get my hands on about how to parent a child with autism and what to expect. And I wasn't finding what I wanted to read. What I wanted to read was practical, down-to-earth solutions from parents who said, you know, I've had this problem and this happened, and I just wasn't finding anything about it. A lot of the writings I was reading, stuff was pretty pessimistic and I didn't read a lot of uplifting things, and, you know, I didn't read a lot of funny things. And not that it's funny, it's, you know, the biggest challenge in my life, obviously, but, you know, you've got to find solutions. With autism, you're fighting every day, it feels like, you know, for things large and small, and there's a lot of challenges, but, you know, you got to find your way and you got to find solutions. So anyway, the challenges are large and small. So what I started doing was writing a column, because sometimes with autism, some little problem ends up being kind of a big problem. So, you know, for instance, when Max decides he's not brushing his teeth anymore because he can't stand the sensory experience, now he's getting, you know, cavities, and then he refuses to see the dentist. This is a problem for me. You know, this relates to his oral health, although it's a sensory issue. Or, you know, so now how do I find a dentist for him? Or I wasn't finding anything written about those practical day-to-day small things that end up blowing into big problems. So, like, what happens when your kid decides he's going to play with eggs, like crack them all over the place and slide around in them and rub them all over his face, and you're scared to death he's going to get salmonella or some horrible thing like that. So I started writing about all these adventures, I called them, every day, or, you know, when he gets out and runs away. And that's certainly not funny, but I write these things with the hope that people can read what I'm writing and either, you know, learn from some of the things I've stumbled into as solutions or help me. And that's happened sometimes with the articles that I write for the Provincial Autism Center. For a while, Max wouldn't let anyone cut his hair. Which doesn't seem like a huge problem, except he was approaching his first day of school and had a huge mullet. Because, like, 3 months before, he only let someone cut his bangs and the sides really, really short. And it's a sensory issue. He doesn't like anyone around the back of his neck. Refused to let anyone touch the back of his hair. So I was sending him into school with this huge, like, circa Billy Ray Cyrus, like, major mullet, right? So, I mean, that's not a life and death thing, but it was a challenge. So after I wrote my article, some guy just wrote in and said, oh, you should take Max to see, you know, Bob and some barber. And, like, Bob's really great with my autistic son. And you know, now Max just doesn't mind getting haircuts at all. But it's like, I was talking with Rabab about this yesterday. It's like you solve one tiny dilemma and then another one crops up. And it all relates to the sensory issues and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But these are small challenges. These are the day-to-day things. There are also many, many larger issues that parents are facing. So, you know, there's a lot, and we need to be positive. We need to look for solutions, and we need to share and reach out to each other as parents. We need to find the humor in the situation because, you know, if you don't laugh, you're just going to sit and cry all day, and that doesn't help anybody. So.
And certainly, Rabab and John have found some inspiration in the situation and found some really exciting projects to get involved in and some movements. And Rabab, you've been really done a lot of lobbying. Tell us a little bit about some of your experiences on the political level to try to get to do advocacy for autistic people and get them the services they need. What's the government policy been up until now, and what needs to change?
Well, sorry. When we moved from Vancouver to Halifax, it was 2002, and my son just was diagnosed with autism 2 weeks before we moved. And when I came here and I found out that autistic children here, they don't receive behavior therapy, and speech therapy is little amount, so... And long waiting lists, which time is very crucial for autistic children because the symptoms are reversible if they get the treatment early ages. Later on, it's too late. And that was the reason that I tried so hard to do something about it. And I start talking to politician and sending a letter to newspaper, talking to parents. I spoke to health minister, and then in the end I get a petition from health professionals that who understood the issue of autism, and I took it to my MLA, which Clayton Park. So, and she put her private bill on that one. So, and bill passed in 2004. Provincial government announced that they will cover the behavior therapy up to age 6 in Nova Scotia through healthcare, not private, because private is cost $150 per session, and children need many hours of them. So that was what I did, and later on, more advocacy I done. It was 2007, before 2007, when I read about that the federal government didn't want to sign United Nations Convention on Rights of People with Disabilities, and for sake of my son, I thought that I should do something about it. So I gathered a petition, and mostly it was from Dalhousie, which I really appreciate that. And also I dedicated that work to Dalhousie community for the great work they done. I mean, it was a great support I got from Dalhousie. And I gave it to Alexa McDonald. And also I put it on online on Vancouver, asking people in Vancouver and other places to send a letter to Prime Minister. So that was a successful, and federal government signed the United Nations Convention on March 30th. And the local level also, I when they were closing three schools in South End, elementary schools, including my son's school, I worked on that one too. So far we've been informed that they are not going to close until at least my son's school, Ingalls Street School, until 2011. And I'd like to mention one thing, that Ingalls Street School is the best thing happened to my son. They really doing great, great job. My son is so happy, and he is getting lots of help and support from not only teachers and principal, but also students. I want to thank them.
John, do you have stuff you'd like to add about DCAS? How has is DCAS a what work happens in DCAS? Is it a political group? Is it an advocacy group? A sharing circle? What happens in DCAS? Tell us about it.
That's the great thing about DCAS. It's certainly all of the above. as we said at the beginning, DCAS stands for the Dalhousie Culture of Autism Awareness Society. And the emphasis there on the Dalhousie Culture of Awareness is that it's not just a support group for people who are affected by autism, although people who are affected by autism can certainly find peer and support with DCAS. It's a and to answer the question whether or not it's social, whether it becomes social, it does, because, as we've talked about, autism is going to be a lifelong affair for anyone who's got it. And a lot of the problems that occur, we've talked about here today, happen outside the home. And outside the home is where you meet everyone else. So without awareness, without people knowing what's going on, what autism is, how it can be dealt with, what's involved in it, for example, something like the tantrums Hamida talked about, look just like that, just like tantrums to the casual passerby, which is itself loaded full of stigma, the accusations of bad parenting or bad a child who can't behave himself or herself. It doesn't at a glance necessarily look like no one walks by a child throwing a tantrum and says, oh, autism. And so the DCAS is interested in building a group of awareness that includes both those affected by autism, either directly or indirectly, but also people who are just, well, really anyone at all who wants to be part of their community, understand that awareness is the only solution to this problem. At the end of the day, autistic persons live in communities, and it's the degree to which their community knows about them, knows about their disorder, that's going to allow that person to live in a more or less normal life in that community. So DCAS is interested in spreading awareness about what autism is, and also how it how to deal with it, how to cope with it, what to do and what not to do. So that's what DCAS is, what their platform is about. We've actually done, we're very new, we've just been ratified at Dalhousie, so meetings are going to be commencing shortly. As you can see by our presence here today, one of our major objectives in terms of awareness is getting in touch with and getting on local media, making autism a visible and accessible force. What's maybe not well known is the incidence of autism is rising fairly dramatically, both as a consequence, or primarily as a consequence of better diagnostic criterion and catching this at an earlier age and knowing what we're looking for. And as the incidence rises, it's getting to a point now where autism affects more people than some of the major, you know, terrifying diseases like AIDS and cancer combined. There are more autistic people in North America discovered each year than there are people suffering from those diseases. So it's not just a 1 in 1,000 incidence. It's about 1 in 150 children actually end up having some degree of autism or Asperger's. And I don't think that's a well-known fact. I don't think people are aware of how common some degree of this disorder is. I'd like to add to that just very quickly, not to steal the spotlight here from autism. I myself am an attention deficit sufferer, and I wasn't diagnosed until I was 23. And it had a very, very dramatic impact on my life when I began to realize that a lot of my forgetting and my distractions, and we're speaking today about sensory, small sensory details having a dramatic impact on someone's behavior. Well, For example, I was 10 minutes late today for our meeting, primarily because my cat was purring very loudly, and I was just caught up in that without even meaning to be. And those kind of behaviors my whole life haunted me. I blamed myself for them. I thought I was responsible. I identified myself as being irresponsible or lazy or flawed in some way. And when I was diagnosed and realized that attention deficit is a neurological disorder, I began to take it seriously and to fight it and to deal with it on its terms. And I feel like autism is subject to that same sort of hidden awareness, where it's a disorder that happens inside the brain and doesn't have any immediate physiological symptoms, and something that can be easily overlooked. And to that end, awareness is really the only solution for this to become a socially for social motivation to be there to help care for and support people in the community.
So DCAS, for those listeners who've just tuned in, is the Dalhousie Culture of Autism Awareness Society. And we've been speaking with a few members, John Muley, Robab Hangpa. We've also been speaking with people who live with autism or live with autistic children or brothers. Hamid Sakai has a brother, and Don Morrison has a son, Max, who is autistic. Robab, of course, has a son as well, is autistic. And that's going to... we're going to cut to a song now, but I want to thank our guests for coming in. Thanks for coming in this morning, and wonderful discussion. So again, you're listening to CKDU Operation Wake Up, and we'll be right back.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
So welcome back to Operation Wake Up. We're almost out of time, and we've been having a very wonderful roundtable discussion about autism. We're speaking with people who live with autism and who advocate for it and build awareness around it. Hamid Sakai, Robab Hagpa, Don Morrison, and John Muley have been in the studio with me, and I just wanted to ask if there's any other final points you'd like to mention before we're done, Don or Robab. Don, would you like to go?
Just early intervention is so important, and early diagnosis. So I guess read up on autism. Read as much as you can about it. If you're the parent of a toddler, there are some signs, but the difficulty is some signs point to autism, and then they could just as easily be in a completely typical child. So, you know, you have to be aware of them meeting their developmental milestones. If your child seems to have a delay in speaking, if they get to, you know, 1.5, 2 years old, they're not babbling or saying one or two words. I think they're really supposed to have about 50 words by the time they're, you know, 2, 2.5, and that is not absolute, so I don't want to create a panic. But just as a general guideline, when my son was 2, my GP told me he really should have about 50 words, and he had none. So that was kind of the very first inkling I had that maybe I should get my son checked. And also the eye contact. He didn't really have eye contact with anyone except for me. If someone came into the room, he didn't respond to his name. In fact, a lot of these symptoms mimic hearing issues, so I was told to get him checked. People thought he was deaf at first because he just was in his own world, not paying attention. So, you know, just as parents, I think we have to be really vigilant. We have to be aware of what milestones our children are supposed to be making at what stages, and if there seems to be any delay, you know, the earlier the better that you're on it and investigating, because as hard as it is to deal with any potential problem, it's much harder down the road when, you know, years have gone by and you might have missed the opportunity, so...
Thanks very much, Don. Robab, is there some final comments you'd like to make?
Yes, I would like to ask community to support our children and our families. And what basically I'm asking, based on my experience, I saw that anytime the child shows the tantrum, strangers, they usually stare at us or interfere. And this caused huge problem because child becomes confused. More confused, many child notice that strangers behaving this way. It's not that they don't feel it. These children, they feel and they understand. And the parents, of course, become more frustrated. And at that time, we're dealing with the issue. So we need public support on that. We need public to understand that it's not child's fault. It's not parents' fault. And please give us a little space to deal with the situation. Thank you,
Robab. John, was there
just a last closing word? I've realized it's just occurred to me in my haste that I didn't actually mention how people can get in touch with CCAS. If you check out the Housing Society website, Tiger Societies, we have a page there. It's a bit in progress, so it'll become more glamorous as we have more attention for it. But please, everyone who's not for those listeners who aren't personally affiliated with this disorder, I would encourage you to exercise curiosity and to get informed, if nothing else. The internet, if nothing else, is a very simple and fast resource to get a basic understanding. And if you have more, if you're more curious, there are plenty of societies within Halifax and internationally that are very happy to provide information and ways to help. Compassion is a rewarding experience and not something anybody has to have an excuse to exercise.
Thank you, John. And Hamid, we haven't forgotten about you. Is there some final words you'd like to say?
I'd just like to say that I'm very optimistic to see that awareness in general from seeing everyone here and some other people I've met and the formation of DCAS, that I'm very optimistic of where this is going now. It doesn't feel so much lonelier like it felt like, you know, living in with someone who's autistic, you always kind of feel isolated from your larger community, and it's almost like you have something to hide. But now you feel, you know, it's more open, and I just want to say congratulations and keep up the good work, everyone here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say one more thing for my baby.
Mm-hmm.
You are my wonderful young man. I love you so much, and you are love of my life.
Okay, thanks very much, everybody. This is Operation Wake Up on CKDU 88.1. What's wrong with the world, mama?
addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism. But we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate. And that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all,
people
y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt anyway.
CKDU 88.1 FM
in Hell Effect.
You can't do that.
Oh, yes.
And I love you, Mommy.